Welcome to another new episode of the Three Bid League podcast. As always, I am your host, Tyler. My co-host, Matt, will rejoin the show later in the week. But it's all right, because today we got two fantastic guests joining us. First, Wayne Epps from the Richmond Times-Dispatch will come on to talk VCU and their huge games this week, a rematch against Davidson, and the first edition of the rivalry game with Richmond. Then we're going to talk to Dave Ascoli, better known as Rhodey Rampage, to, of course, talk about the Rhode Island Rams. But before we get underway, I do want to point out that we, for the first time here at the Three Bid League Pod, have a true intro and outro song. That song that you heard on the way into this episode is My Light by Meek of the Week. You can hear their music on Spotify. That is Meek, M-I-E-K, of the Week, W-E-E-K. And they are going to be leading us in to the show for the foreseeable future. And you can hear the full song at the end of this episode. Now, we'll go to Wayne Epps. All right, we are now joined by one of the great coverage guys in the A-10, one of the last old school newspaper beat writers in the conference, Wayne Epps from the Richmond Times-Dispatch, covering the VCU Rams. Thanks for coming on the show again, Wayne.
Definitely. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, well, you do some great coverage for VCU, and I know I certainly enjoyed the last time you came on this pod back in March, and I hope that the fans did too. So we had to get you on this year again. And this seemed like a very good time. It's been a decent year for VCU so far. They struggled out of the gate, but once they got Ace Baldwin back, they really kicked things into gear. They're coming off of a week and a half where they lost two of three games, got crushed by St. Bonaventure, and then lost a very, very close one against Davidson in a game where it really felt like they had it in the second half and just kind of let it slip away at the end. But they bounced back against St. Joe's on a day where the Siegel Center was packed, Travion Graham's jersey got retired, and it felt like they kind of got their mojo again in the second half. So with this team sitting in third place right now, kind of a little bit on the outside looking into the NCAA tournament, what's the mood around the team? How are the players feeling? How is Mike Rhodes feeling?
I think it's a confident group. You know, one thing that was interesting after that Davidson loss last Tuesday, Keyshawn Curry, one of the seniors, kind of expressed that he still feels like they're the best team in the league. That's kind of mentality that they're taking. So, they took Davidson, to the brink last Tuesday, and maybe should have won that game. You know, was up, by six with about 5 minutes to go in that game, and just ended up letting that slip with a rough finish to the game. But they still, carrying that confidence, even losing to Davidson, even losing to St. Bonaventure the way they did the previous week. They still look like they're a team that's capable of finishing in the top four, of course, in the league where they stand right now. So, even with five newcomers with this group, you got, three freshmen who are, they're laying on pretty regularly here in the rotation. They've kind of proved themselves even without Bones to be a competitive team in this league. So, but it's going to take, better finish, better play in those critical situations against teams like Davidson, teams like St. Bonaventure to get themselves a legitimate chance at a conference title. So we'll see if they would perform better this upcoming Wednesday at Davidson.
Yeah, and I personally believe that part of the reason why they struggled to close that game against Davidson and the big reason why they struggled to hang with St. Bonaventure is, as we've talked about all year, incredible defense, but the offense just not up to par on a fair amount of nights. Now, the one thing that could change that is that Vince Williams has been excellent in conference play so far. 15 points a game, 4 assists per game. He was, quite frankly, just not that great on the offensive end in the non-con. His shooting numbers were very, very poor at the end of December. And he has really turned things around here to the point that KenPom actually has him rated at the moment as the second best player in the A-10 in terms of end of the season awards. So I think to most people, if they haven't watched VCU, if they flip over to the stat sheet, see 12 points a game for Vince Williams for the season, they're kind of confused as to why he's being so well regarded. But outside of just this little uptick in better shooting in the conference play, what has made him so special this season?
Yeah, I think you kind of seen him really do a good job of sort of picking his spots. And, you know, one thing kind of was asking him earlier in the season, which, you know, you mentioned, of course, he had some struggles throughout non-conference, so it wasn't a thing where it was a linear, you know, sort of arc of improvement. But he mentioned sort of earlier in the season about how he really was trying to be more aggressive, and he felt like that wasn't working for him. So he got to the point where he felt like he had to sort of let the game come to him and felt like that was more comfortable and allowed him to be more efficient. And again, it hasn't been, you know, consistent all the time, but I think he's done a better job doing that consistently so far in conference play to, you know, shoot the ball efficiently, kind of find his spots. Like, you know, he's not obviously just a scorer for VCU, he's a playmaker for VCU as well. He's right up there with Ace as far as, you know, distributing the ball and you know, getting guys shots. So there's times where he's doing that. He's not looking to score himself, but the times that he does look to take those shots, I think he's taking good shots, whether it's taking it to the hoop or, you know, shooting threes, which he's done efficiently well here as well. So I think Saturday was a good example of that when he had four threes in that game. A couple of those were big in the second half as VCU was trying to pull away in that game and ended up with the, you know, career high tying 21 points. So I think you're seeing a senior really be comfortable out there on the floor. He knows his place in the rotation, but, you know, playing with this group, and I think it's really shown now here, you know, the second half of the season.
Yeah, and just I want to throw in an interesting stat here. In conference play, him and Ace Baldwin are combining for 10 assists a game, which is even more impressive than it sounds when you realize that VCU's stifling defense is only surrendering 11.8 assists a game to opponents. So those two are basically matching what their opponents are doing on a game-to-game basis. But as I said, Williams is just playing so much better offensively in conference play. They have Ace Baldwin back now. It kind of looks like a different team than the one that lost to Chattanooga and Wagner in November, when a lot of guys who are now role players had to take on a brunt of the offensive responsibility. So to me, the most interesting of that group are the other guards, Marcus Sahonis, Jaden Nunn, Keyshawn Curry. Just out of those guys, is there one player that you feel like has really done a great job of adjusting as the season's gone on to the return of Baldwin and the improvement of Williams?
Yeah, I think Marcus Sahonis has been key in that aspect because, you know, the interesting thing is, you know, with him, like, you know, he played some point guard, played some shooting guard before he came to VC this past offseason when he was at Washington. But his more natural position is that off the ball, you know, shooting guard spot. And, you know, when Ace was out to start the season, he was forced to kind of play a true point guard position, you know, backing up Jaden Nunn in the rotation when he started the year. But now with Ace back and, you know, you're able to put Ace and Jaden at point guard, Marcus has been able to move to pretty much exclusively playing off the ball. And I think you've seen, you know, over time now, these nine games that Ace has been back, that's allowed him to be more comfortable, allowed him to find his shots. And he's shooting the three a lot better here recently. You know, he scored double figures, you know, three of the last four games. He struggled a little bit against Davidson, but before that, he scored in double figures for three straight games. So I think Ace's return really helped him a lot because now he's able to play more freely and play more, you know, comfortably, you know, at that two guard spot. So that's been big. And Keyshawn has had a good month of January as well. You know, he scored in double figures, I believe, three of the last four as well, too, and playing a little bit more efficiently. He's not a shooter per se. You know, people who know his game know, you know, he's really an aggressive slasher, either scoring in transition or in the half court getting to the rim. And sometimes some maybe wild drives to the rim, but I think he's done a good job similar to Vince of picking his spots and scoring efficiently here, you know, in this recent stretch of games here too. So for a VCU team who, you know, maybe trying to find that consistent maybe third scorer behind Vince and Ace, I think those two guys have stepped up well in that aspect the last few games.
Yeah, and Keyshawn Curry, he's grown a lot this season. He's a guy that, when I saw him starting on opening night, I honestly was kind of surprised because I basically forgot he was on the team. And I mean, we scour these rosters before the season And in the month between doing the VCU preview and seeing them trot out that first starting lineup, he completely slipped my mind. And he has been so impressive on the defensive end this year. Like you said, he's starting to come into his own offensively a little bit. But for me, he does my favorite little niche VCU thing this year, which is I think he has to lead the conference in fast break points. Sadly, if this was the NBA, I think we'd have a real stat tracking that. But he is so good at just leaking out off of rebounds and steals. And he's lightning quick. So just something I wanted to throw out there.
Oh, yeah. So fast. He's you know, VCU's version of Russell Westbrook. Like, you know, once he gets the ball in transition, just a full head of steam. He wants to throw the ball down, dunk, you know, something to get the, especially if they're playing at home, get the crowd up. So that's kind of been his signature thing. You know, I kind of hark back to early in his career, his freshman year, they had a preseason scrimmage against Virginia Union, Division II team in Richmond, and there was a loose ball right in front of the basket. He came up and dunked it. Like he basically took maybe one step and dunked it right over one of their defenders, and it was kind of from that point on, I was like, man, this guy has some otherworldly athleticism, and like you mentioned, he struggled to find his place in the rotation, so he hasn't really maybe stood out to a lot of people up until this point. But you know, now he's a starter. Now he's getting a consistent time, getting a consistent production. So you know, I think he's really coming to his own at this point in his career as well, which is cool to see. And yeah, he's definitely exciting. That VCU and their game notes this year included like sort of sprint times for quarter court sprint and. The leader actually is their walk-on, Arnold Henderson is sixth, but Keyshawn Curry is number two. So he's one of the fastest guys on the team in that aspect. So it definitely shows in those plays.
Yeah, he's definitely a guy that if you're not watching the games and just looking at the box score, he doesn't look like he's doing anything special. He's an eye test guy all the way. And great comparison too. Keyshawn Curry, 43.6% shooting percentage this year. Russell Westbrook, 43.7%. So shooting about the same, although Westbrook is slightly better from three on the year.
Yeah. And I mean, like I said, those two guys, you know, you don't necessarily always look for them to shoot the ball. They're like put their head down, get to the rim type of guys. So, it's a pretty interesting comparison. I think they're very similar in a lot of ways, the way they approach the game is very aggressively. So it's kind of cool to see.
Yeah, thankfully for VCU, though, Curry is a better teammate than Russell Westbrook. So, we've covered the perimeter guys. I mean, it's basically those three guards that I just mentioned, Baldwin Williams, and then we'll see Josh Banks grab some minutes here and there. The interesting piece that Mike Rhodes kind of has to play around with here is who's the fifth guy? Who's their center in crunch time as we go down – towards the rest of the season? And how does he split up the minutes between really his three main big men? Mikal Brown-Jones is playing a little bit too, but you got Levi Stockard back healthy. Hassan Ward, who is still a shot-blocking maniac, but just hasn't quite made the same impact as last year. His minutes are actually down a little bit. And then a guy that I really like, Jalen Deloach, who I just realized this weekend I've been accidentally calling Jaden this entire year. So I might have to go back and edit a few old podcasts. But I really like his game. He's still a little bit unpolished, which you expect from a 6'8 freshman. But I think he has the potential to be a great post-up offensive big man next year, 2 years from now. Who do you think is going to kind of emerge as the go-to guy when we get to, say, late February, early March at that center spot?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Hassan has been that guy, but he's had a little bit of a down year. He also battled injury, you know, back in non-conference play, missed a couple games. So, you know, that could maybe kind of hinder him a little bit. Levi Stockard III was out a little bit. He missed some time. He was in COVID protocol, and they were dealing with some COVID issues, and he missed a couple games when they came back. But now he started the last two games now at the five. And then Jalen Deloach has been that first sub here recently as well at the five, and he's been playing really well. here recently. So that's an interesting question. You know, once they get down to the 18 tournament time, who's going to be that guy at the end of the game that they're looking to? Because again, you would maybe peg Hassan Ward as that guy, but he's kind of struggled here recently. And like you said, Jalen Loach has been very, very promising. He's really scoring around the basket really well. You see him really get involved in the pick and roll action with Ace really well too, which is that kind of been Hassan's role. Before he's been dealing with these struggles too. So Jalen's a very athletic guy. You know, on the other end, he can defend multiple positions. He's sort of that VCU prototypical big who is very, very mobile. But then on the offensive end, he can really score down low really well too and elevate. So I think he has a big future ahead of him. So it's interesting to see how that position kind of plays out the rest of the year. Levi had played pretty well for a stretch to end non-conference play, but again, he kind of was in dealing with the COVID protocols and trying to get back into a groove now that he's back in the lineup. So we'll see how that plays out here the last several weeks of the season.
Yeah, and I know that as soon as Ace came back, I started yelling at the TV for Mike Rhodes to trot out a Baldwin, Curry, Nunn, Williams, Ward lineup, just play lightning fast, VCU style, or even with Jaloch in at the five. And, you know, that worked pretty well against Dayton, team with quicker big men like Kamara and Holmes. And it kind of just depends on the matchup, because in the LaSalle game, you really saw Levi Stockard's value. He missed that game. Clifton Moore goes for 21 points, 12 rebounds on 8 of 12 shooting. And he was just a little bit too thick, a little bit too strong for Ward, Deloach, and Brown Jones. And that's kind of the reminder, Levi Stockard is their muscle in the middle. And certain games against guys like Ashuna Shunahi, Luka Brejkovic, Grant Golden, he's a guy that you have to have, even if it's just for 15 minutes, just to grab some rebounds and rough people up.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like I said, he is their only true sort of prototypical big, because Hassan and Jalen and Mikael are more of those mobile sort of leaner bigs. And Levi, you've seen him really progress with as far as his post moves and his ability to score down low too. But then on the defensive end, he's that big body that can take on some of those more experienced bigs from other teams as well. So, yeah, I totally agree. You definitely saw that against LaSalle. But then, you know, there's been some games where Levi has gotten into, foul trouble too, like against, St. Bonaventure too. So that's one thing. And Jalen had battled foul trouble as well. So that's one thing those guys are going to have to watch out for, because the depth maybe isn't always there at the five. But we'll kind of see how that position plays out. See if they keep, Stocker there as a starter moving forward. But Jalen, again, has been an early sub at that spot. He's been getting a lot of minutes too. So it's going to be kind of intriguing. And you mentioned there too, a good point as far as moving Vince to the four. That's something they've been doing, in conference play, especially when they didn't have Levi out of the COVID pause. And that's something that they really like, because it gives them an extra ball handler on the court, because Vince can handle the ball. I think that's really worked well for them. They've stuck with that lineup here throughout the month of January, and it's worked well for them.
Yeah, and it's just really hard to have two of the four between Baldwin, Nunn, Sahonis, and Curry on the bench at the same time. You just watch that team. They're all so important to what they do. And unfortunately, they're too small to just play all four of them on the court together. But if you play one of those guys 20 minutes in a game, you feel like you're really, really missing something.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree.
So, like I mentioned, you need Levi Stockard in certain games. And this week, going up, rematch against Davidson on Wednesday night, and then the rivalry game. I don't know who sponsors it anymore. Is it a car company now, maybe? It used to be Lumber Liquidators. I'm going to keep calling it the Lumber Liquidators Classic until somebody corrects me. So, but taking on Richmond on Saturday, both games, national TV. So just a huge week for the Rams, sitting at 4-2, trying to hold on to that top four spot. So you are the expert on VCU. You're closer to the team than just about anybody. What are two things, whether they're either game specific or VCU specific, that you're going to be looking for them to go 2-0 this week?
Number one would be their ability to convert inside, which is something that they did well, even the loss to Davidson on this past Tuesday. You know, they outscored Davidson 34-26 in the paint in that two-point loss, but they were 9 of 21 on layup attempts. They were just repeatedly, you saw, you know, a bunch of attempts right at the rim, either, you know, bounce right off, clang right off the hoop, went halfway in and bounced back out. You know, in that two-point game, those really hurt late. So, you know, Mike Rose talked about it today in his press conference. You know, they always obviously want to get paint touches. Their point for possession is a lot higher when they're able to get the ball inside and either, you know, score inside or kick it back out for, you know, an outside shot. So their ability to work back inside again against Davidson on Wednesday, I think will be key. And the same against, you know, a Grant Golden, you know, Tyler Burton on Saturday against Richmond too. That's all something they try to attack, you know, there too. And that's a game, you know, talking about Levi Stocker, I think that's going to be a game going to be pivotal in a game like that on Saturday. So, you know, that's one. And then two, just, you know, their ability to speed up and score in transition against both of those teams. You know, both of those teams are, you know, historically kind of more deliberate on offense. They really feed off of the off-ball and the action and the backdoor cuts and things like that. So, VCU's ability to, you know, score in transition and sort of not let – and really proud of the press and not let them really get set in their offense early in the shot clock, I think will be key. And, you know, that's something that they obviously won't look to do every game, but I think it's, the importance of that is heightened in those types of games against Davidson and Richmond because of the types of sort of Princeton-style offenses that they run. So I think that's number two.
Yeah, and Jacob Gilliard, one of the best in the game at taking care of the ball, but we've seen in the past, VCU is really the one team that can kind of fluster him. I know, I believe it was 2 years ago that there was a game where Richmond was really starting to ride high. VCU was fading and they were just attacking him at the half court line. So I definitely could not agree more about bringing the pressure. Richmond wants to play slow. They want to play deliberate. And ironically, that's actually the offense that has not worked for them as of late. It's been a lot of hero ball that's kind of kept them alive as they've been struggling. So it will be an interesting showdown to see if VCU speeding them up actually helps or hurts.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. But you know, VCU, they live obviously on those, you know, points off turnovers, and you know, really kind of just disrupting full court and you know, not letting the team get set early in that shot clock for any game. So I think you can't kind of get away from that bread and butter. And you know, I think the odds of helping them against Richmond are high regardless. So we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, most likely, especially if they can just get Gilliard flustered. They don't have a great go-to second ball handler, especially now that they're playing Andre Gustafsson a lot more than Isaiah Wilson at this point. Kind of get rid of that second pseudo point guard that Wilson represented. So yeah, we'll close this out with two questions here for you. Number one, because I think VCU is really just a dream for a fan of the nitty-gritty of the game of basketball. So like I mentioned earlier, my favorite thing about this team is Keyshawn Curry's ability to just constantly get down the floor for breakaway layups. So what has been the most enjoyable, just little thing to watch during these games this season?
It's a great question. I think I'll just probably say that the energy overall, you know, I think it's the group that, you know, sort of, it's kind of cliche, but enjoys, you know, playing with each other. Like, you know, you see when they're able to go on those runs, you know, creating, you know, transition points and things like that, you know, it's something that they really enjoy. Like, for instance, early in the second half, this past Saturday against St. Joseph, they had a quick 8-0 run. It took just like a minute and 15 of game time. And the last three baskets and that were off of turnovers. Two of those were deep in the backcourt, like right at the opposing foul line. And they just poked the ball away and scored. You really saw the energy they had in those types of moments. And it's something they kind of flip on a switch. So I think just that overall energy that they were able to play with, you know, from freshman through senior, I think it's been you know, fun to see. Again, we weren't sure how that was going to look with these five newcomers coming in, but I think that the freshmen have assimilated well. So it's cool to see how it's worked so far.
It's a great answer. I think we all love the VCU energy, but you know, you're a nice guy. You really like this team and you really like the players on it. And it's hard to fault you, but I'm going to put you back on the spot. There's got to be something about one of these guys specifically that you want to praise over the rest, even over the rest of them.
Oh, like an individual?
Yeah.
Let's see. Well, I would say Ace, you know, his command of the offense has been really cool to see. Like, it's like, I mean, Jay Nunn for a freshman, it's really hard to come in and play starter point guard as a freshman. Like, obviously Ace did it last year, and he did well, but he had his moments where maybe he had some struggles too. But it was the switch from when Ace came back in mid-December, and their ability, you know, to execute better on offense, be more shorthanded on offense, you know, it was almost, you know, sort of night and day. And so just how different they look on offense with him back, I think has been big. So just to seeing how his command on offense, how he's grown from his freshman and sophomore year, I think it's been clear. So that's been kind of cool to see too on an individual level.
Yeah, and we saw last year with him and with Bones Highland the year before, Mike Rhodes kind of eased them in as the season went along. Jaden Nunn got thrown into the fire out of circumstance this year. So it has been an improvement with Ace back, but Jaden Nunn could be pretty good down the road. And my runner-up, by the way, is Ace Baldwin's floater. I just love that shot.
Yeah. He can get that shot off very well. You know, it's funny you mentioned that. I was actually talking to one of our photographers at our office earlier today, and he was showing me a picture he had taken shooting a floater, and we were kind of looking at his shooting form. It's like, you know, like textbook shooting form, just rising straight up, no movement, and that's what you need in those types of shots, especially a running floater. So we were kind of dissecting his shooting form, you know, I guess pseudo shot doctor a little bit, but so it was kind of fun looking at those pictures, but he definitely can get that shot off. And as a point guard in today's game, like, that's kind of like, you know, sort of the trendy shot. Like, you have to have that shot in your bag, and he's definitely added it well.
Yeah, especially when you're going up against all the crazy shot blockers in this league. Although, thankfully for him, he doesn't have to try to ever get the ball above Hassan Ward in games that are viewed by actual eyeballs. So yeah. We'll close things out with this. You know, a lot of the guests we have on here are people who kind of just do this on the side. And so the focus is basically solely on basketball. But with you as a true local newsman, you get to dive into the kind of public interest fan stories occasionally. And you posted a great one the other day that I had not seen when it came out, I believe in 2019, about the Sons of Havoc, a group of VCU fans who sit right near the opposing bench. They dress up a few times a year and basically just go crazy. And these are not students. These are people who are deep in the throes of adult life. And so just kind of going off of that, what do you think is the favorite of yours among these kind of like human interest fan stories that you've been able to write over the past few years?
Yeah, that's a great question as well. That's definitely up there. Like you said, you know, those guys were kind of, you know, longtime friends. You know, they knew each other from when they went to VCU together, and they've kind of remained friends, kept going to games, and, you know, going back to when Shaka Smart was there, they kind of, you know, dubbed themselves the Sons of Shaka or the Sons of Havoc. And they've continued to go to games, and they had those seats. And now, you know, everybody kind of knows who they are. They sit right there near the visiting team's bench and on the baseline. And, you know, over the years, they've dressed up with all kinds of things. And so this past Saturday, it was the first time I've seen them in a while, you know, at least in costume. They dressed up as wrestlers. There was like Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, like The Undertaker. And they do like real. It's not like they don't go halfway. Like, they go all the way. It's almost like movie style costumes that they go out and find, and with the full makeup and everything. So they went all out for this, which was cool to see. So that was a fun one. Trying to think. I think that would probably be number one in my mind as far as that. I think now the cool, you know, things I've got a chance to do, like you know, them bringing back Darius Theus and Brandon Rozelle, writing about them. They're, you know, obviously two former, you know, VCU greats, and now on staff for VCU as sort of directors of player development. So getting a chance to write about them was them coming back to the program were cool. So I guess human interest stories too. But as far as the fans, I think the Sons of Havoc was the number one that I've got a chance to write about, because those guys were fun to talk to, and it's fun to see them dress up in costume.
Yeah, it was a great article. And for anyone who didn't happen to see it, that'll be retweeted from the 3Bid League page. So if you want to just scroll back and look at the picture of these guys in their wrestling costumes, you can see what Wayne's talking about.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you for joining us again, Wayne. If there's anyone out there that has just simply decided that they do not want to get the best VCU coverage to this point, where do they find you?
Richmond.com/sports is where, you know, my story's at. And, you know, like I said, on Twitter at Wayne Epps Jr. So, I appreciate you having me. I really enjoy you guys' coverage, really enjoy listening to the podcast and following you guys, you know, on Twitter. So, you know, 810 Twitter is better for you guys. So I appreciate you having me on. Always enjoy.
Yeah, well, Wayne, I could repeat all of that exact same right back to you. Once again, if you are not following this guy yet, he's there for all of the breaking news before and after the VCU games. Great in-game coverage. Some great write-ups too, whether it's just game stories or just some fun other stuff. So be sure to go find his stuff. And Wayne, thank you for coming on again.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. We are now being joined by Dave Scully, better known on Twitter as the man behind the Roadie Rampage account. Dave, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm going to start things off with maybe the most vague question I've ever asked on this pod. Like, I guess, what is Rhode Island? This team's 3-2 in the A-10. They've beaten a few cupcakes. They played great against Davidson and just kind of lost control at the very end. And there were at least a lot of reasons to be very optimistic that they could win some games against good teams and keep cleaning up against the bottom going into Saturday when they just got kind of smacked around in the second half by George Washington. So, like, what do we think of this team? Where are they going to finish in the standings?
You know, it's hard to say. I will correct one thing you said. They've beaten more than a few cupcakes. They've beaten mostly cupcakes. I mean, their best win based on KenPom is Boston College at 144.
Twice,
okay. Yeah, I mean, one was at a neutral site, so that's – but, yeah, I don't think BC is going to be winning the ACC this year, unfortunately, for URI and their metrics. But, yeah, what is URI? I truly don't know. They're a team that has played a phenomenally weak schedule. Part of it is because they haven't really faced any of the top tier teams aside from Davidson, which you mentioned, in the A-10. So that has contributed to it. Their non-conference schedule was weak, partly a number of reasons, partly due to COVID, partly due to some home and homes that were pushed back until next year. Seton Hall is one of those. And partly because they built a pretty fluffy non-conference schedule in full transparency. So it's hard to say who they are, considering they've been beating up on bad teams and losing to bad teams, with the exception of Providence and Davidson. So we're about to find out, I think, and I do not have high hopes. Richmond, Dayton, VCU, Dayton again, Davidson again, make up, well, let's see, 5 of their next 7 games. So we'll know by Valentine's Day at the end of the day after they host Dayton where they are. But given their track record so far this year, I am not super confident.
Yeah, and we'll hit the two big games this week against Richmond and Dayton here at the end of the segment. But, you know, this is still a team. There are plenty of reasons to be down, especially after losing to George Washington. But they're 12-5. They are top 100 in KenPom, and they continue to have a pretty darn good defense, 53rd in defensive efficiency according to KenPom. They're top 10 in the nation in opponent 2-point percentage. They actually lost their title in block percentage. They are now number two behind Auburn, who is number one in everything at the moment in college basketball. So besides the great interior defense of the Mitchell Twins, what are the shining lights that you could see potentially leading Rhody to, let's say, a top four finish? Because that's probably about where their ceiling is. And correct me if I'm wrong on that.
No, you're 100% right. That's kind of, you know, as I mentioned with the schedule, they don't have the schedule to build an at-large resume. Period. So their best goal to playing in the postseason, whether it be the NCAA tournament, which would involve winning the A-10, or a lower tier postseason tournament, would be finishing in the top four. And, you know, pre-GW and certainly pre-LaSalle, I thought they had a really good shot. I mean, KenPom was projecting them in the top four finish. Now I'm not so sure. But to answer your question of, you know, what could potentially lead them there, I think it's got to be that it starts with the Mitchell Twins. They are incredibly talented for Rhody fans. They're also incredibly frustrating at the same time. Their good is very good, and their bad makes you rip your hair out in terms of free throws or just poor decision making. But when those guys are playing their best, URI is incredibly tough to beat. And aside from them, you know, Jeremy Shepard, obviously, I think most A-10 fans know who he is now, Ish Leggett, that kind of guard play and their depth, really. I mean, Antoine Walker and Malik Martin, who is hurt, and hopefully he's back tomorrow night. I haven't seen anything either way on that, but he shouldn't be out for long. But bringing those two guys off the bench, plus Jalen Carey, plus Sebastian Thomas, they're a very deep team. They can beat you in a lot of different ways. If certain guys are having off nights, they have other guys to plug in. So if they do well, that's how they'll do it.
Yeah, and quick aside here, as someone who knows Rhody inside and out and watches all the games, how many games last year did it take you to figure out which Mitchell Twin was which?
It actually happened very quickly because Makai Mitchell got hurt in like game six and missed the remainder of the season. So it made it very easy for me. And then this year I was like, oh crap, I have to tell these guys apart. I mean, they look very similar. They're both 6'10". You really just have to go on the jersey numbers. Mikhail is 22. Makai is 21. That's pretty much it. And strangely enough, you know, the billing when they came here from Maryland was that, oh, Makai is the star and Mikhail, you know, has some work to do. I think it's the exact opposite. I think Mikhail is the better of the two in terms of his defense, shot blocking, his post moves, and Makai is a little more hit or miss.
Yeah, well, first off, once Makai got back, I didn't fully figure it out till conference play started.
Yeah.
Makai's a little bit quicker on the offensive end, and Mikhail is a lot more physical on both ends. So, but I agree with you. Mikhail's been the better twin this year. Maybe that's because he got the full year of development last year, maybe not. But as I kind of go through and sketch out midseason awards in my head, right now I have him as one of the two big guys on the all-defensive team, along with Oshuna Shunahi. Now it's a very packed field, and so even just continuing to play at the level he has, there's so many other good centers that could potentially jump him for that spot, but he is very much in the hunt there. So
yeah, he made preseason all defensive team. He's seventh in the country individually in block percentage per KenPom. So, and yeah, even when he's not blocking shots, he's altering shots. He's making guys hesitate when they get in the lane and around the basket. So, yeah, I hate to lump them together as a lot of people do. And, you know, when one guy makes a boneheaded play or misses a free throw, you see people going, ah, the Mitchell Twins. I'm like, well, it's just one guy that did that. So, but yeah, he's been phenomenal so far, even building in some of those frustrations that I talked about earlier.
In everyone's defense with that, anytime there's a stupid foul committed by a Mitchell, it very well could be either of them. So
that is true. And or a missed free throw. Yep.
Yeah. So I guess let's just rip the Band-Aid off on that one right now. Any idea what the hell is happening at the free throw line for this team? I missed the beginning part of the LaSalle game, and by the time I flipped it on, they were 3 of 16 from the line. And if they could have – they finished 9 of 22. If they simply could have been decent, then they probably run away with that game. And if they had been decent in the GW game, they probably win it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's unexplainable. It's completely unexplainable. I mean, they were a 70%-ish free throw to shooting team prior to the LaSalle game. Fine, you know, kind of right in the middle of the pack nationally, maybe even slightly better than the middle of the pack nationally. It seemed like misses got contagious in the LaSalle game and everyone started missing them, even guys like Shepard and Leggett, who are very good free throw shooters. I mean, Shepard's shooting 82% on the year. Leggett is more around 67, 68%. But it was very weird. And I was very, very willing to write it off as, oh, you know, it's just one of those games, you know, just weird things happen in single game sample sizes. But then it happened again against GW. And I really can only chalk it up to being something mental because it is super, super bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, it's so crazy that, and Dr. John Giannini, a favorite of this pod, was on the call in that game, and he didn't even have anything close to an explanation for what the hell was going on with that. And if you can baffle the great Dr. John Giannini, then you have really gone into the abyss of bizarrity. They were 15 of 31 from the line, and it certainly did not help that they were also 2 of 19 from 3 in that game. Testament to how dominant they can be in the paint sometimes that they only lost by 2. Just no matter how bad GW is, to hang around with those shooting numbers is still nonetheless impressive.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think GW really came in with the mindset to pack it in the paint and kind of give URI whatever they wanted from three. Malik Martin is one of their better three-point shooters, and he was out for that game, but that's not an excuse whatsoever. They definitely settled. You know, they could have worked for shots in the paint and probably been very successful because they're quite good. Or they could have taken threes, which was the easy way out, and they seem to continually take the easy way out, which is fine if you hit them, but they weren't hitting them, and that kind of cost them that, and the free throw shooting really cost them that game.
So I want to pivot here a little bit to a guy that we didn't really hear from much in that GW game, and that was Antoine Walker. He's a guy who's been kind of a streaky player throughout his whole career. I remember when he first showed up at Rhodey thinking that he was the missing fifth piece to what was a great crew at that time, Jeff Doughton, Fats Russell, Cyril Langevin, and Tyrese Martin. They had Jermaine Harris starting at the four at the time. And there were some games where Walker was incredible, but for the most part, the steady hand of Harris ended up kind of winning out. This year, he's playing 21 minutes a night, 8.3 points a game, 4.7 rebounds. He's certainly been Rhodey's best player in probably 4 or 5 different games. And then he has performances like GW where I literally just forgot he was even playing until late in the game. Now, Rhode Island Twitter, there is a whole pocket that just screams every game, Antoine Walker needs to start. He needs to be the star. It's like watching the Knicks and the Dayton fans salivate over Obi's lack of minutes in New York. So where do you stand on this? Is 21 minutes a game enough for Antoine Walker? Does it need to be more? And if so, where does he kind of start to take those minutes?
It needs to be more, certainly. I mean, he's shooting 68% from two and 44% from three on the year. Obviously, if you increase his usage, those numbers probably go down a little bit. That's just kind of the old adage. However, I have been very adamant since the start of last year that this team is better when there's only one Mitchell twin on the floor. Now, that obviously doesn't say that Antoine Walker should play 40 minutes with one Mitchell twin, but he spreads the floor. He hits threes. He is tough as all hell. And him or Malik Martin should be able to plug into that 4/wing position in a 5-out type deal that look that URI sometimes goes with. And I just think the team is much better, much more balanced when it's one Mitchell twin and either Walker or Martin. Two Mitchell twins, it just doesn't work. I don't know how many of your listeners are Celtics fans, but the Celtics last year tinkered with a too big lineup with Rob Williams and I believe it was Enes Kanter. It never worked. It doesn't work in how today's game lays out. So, Enes Freedom. I'm sorry, I forgot he changed his name. But
you're forgetting it was the bum Tristan Thompson for a fair
that's
amount
right.
of those
that's
attempts.
Right. It was Tristan Thompson. Yeah, Enes Freedom is on the team this year. That's right. I totally forgot about that. But yeah, in any event, too big just doesn't work. I think they're hoping that Mekhi can be more of a wing, but he's just not. He's a big, like, they can't force him to be something he's not. And when he handles more and he takes more shots away from the basket, that really limits his effectiveness. So the long-winded answer is that Antoine Walker and Malik Martin should be taking minutes away from one of the two Mitchell twins, whether it's the hot hand or foul trouble or however that's decided. That's above my pay grade, but that's when I think URI is the most effective.
So shifting quickly to some of the perimeter guys that we've not discussed much about so far. One of the biggest issues, and I think I've said it aloud on the pod probably 20 times now, they just don't have kind of that go-to tough moment bucket getter. So I'll throw a scenario to you. It's the A-10 semifinals. They're down by one with the ball, with time closing out. A win basically gets them in the NIT and gives them a chance to potentially get that automatic bid. Who do you want taking that shot? Jeremy Sheppard, Ish El Amin, or Ish Leggett?
It's got to be El Amin or Leggett. I think if it needs to be a three, it's got to be El Amin.
I'll give you down by one here, so you can go either way.
So I'm going with Leggett. I think he is URI's he's a player that can create his shot amongst URI guards. He is a player that can create his shot and hit it better than anyone on the team. He can drive, he can absorb contact, he basically hit the game-winning bucket against LaSalle, which was just an incredible play. He's the guy I want taking it. El Amin has been quiet. He has been kind of the anti-Fats Russell in that he's been very hands-off. He's more willing to set up other guys on the team. He is more of a vocal leader, but you don't notice him a lot. But he has shown the propensity to hit big threes in games when needed. But if you need a bucket, to me, it's Leggett on this team right now.
I couldn't agree more. I've always thought that Leggett was the best guy of this crew, even though the stats don't quite show it. Only 8.4 points a game, but about 2 assists a game too certainly helps. And I do like that Rhodey right now, after losing Fats Russell to a COVID year grad transfer, has both the anti-Fats Russell in Ishel Amin and the poor man's Fats Russell in Jalen Carey.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Carey is a weird player. When he's good, you're like, wow, I see why this guy was a 4-star and why he went to Syracuse. And then he just makes some baffling plays. In fairness to him, there were way more baffling plays last year than this year. I think this year he has been much improved. His usage, I think Cox's coaching decisions with him have been better. He's been putting him in better positions to succeed. Then
we got to remember Cox thinking he was a point guard last year is the single most bizarre player evaluation that an A-10 coach has had in these last like 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So that has changed potentially and probably because of the addition of Sebastian Thomas, who is, for my money, the only real true point guard on this team. He was supposed to redshirt this year. He didn't. And thank God for that, because he is his court vision, his poise, his ball handling. He's not much of a shooter, but that's going to come. He's a freshman. He wasn't supposed to play this year. He committed very late. But I'm excited what I see from him. And he's definitely a true point guard, which keeps guys like Jalen Carey from handling maybe more than they should.
I can't believe you jumped to my final question before we move into previewing this week, which was basically, what does the future hold for Sebastian Thomas? Because he is my hidden gem player this year in the A-10 among kind of the like unheard of under 15 minute guys in this conference. He just has all of kind of the proper requisites to be a good point guard. He's just not really that great at anything yet. And that's something that will seemingly come over another summer of practices, but he looks like a freshman out there, but he's so poised and he's got great court vision. So.
Yeah. Yeah. To your point, he's not good at anything box score wise, but when you watch him play, he's good at all the other things, poise, court handling, court vision, rather, ball handling. He's a local kid. He's from Providence. They plucked him late. He didn't have any other D1 offers. It was very weird listening to URI fans after watching Kolick win Rookie of the Year last year, who's also from Providence, and say, well, why didn't we get this guy? Why didn't we get this guy? And then they get Sebastian Thomas. They're like, why are we taking this guy? Nobody wanted him. I'm like, that's the same story that Kolick was. And you know, they took a shot on him, and he's been very impressive. And I hope he stays here. I think he will. This is the school he says he's always dreamed about playing at. It's right down the road. So, yeah, I'm very excited to see what unfolds for him moving forward.
Yeah, he's a guy that has really, really gotten me excited about Rhode Island potentially having a real point guard next year, if nothing else. So we'll move into looking into this week's two big games, two games that are going to start to tell us a lot about whether or not Rhodey is a true top half of the league team or not. Tuesday night at home against Richmond, and then the Friday night slot at Dayton. A pair of national TV games for the Rams. And I will just simply go ahead and pose you the exact same question that I gave to Wayne Epps on the first half of this podcast. What are two things about these games this week, whether it's either matchup specific or just specific to Rhode Island, that are incredibly important to the Rams being able to go 2-0?
Ooh, 2-0 is a tough task. I mean, up until this GW game, URI had been tremendous at home, undefeated at home. Until GW, they've been great about protecting their home court. If you throw the GW game out as an outlier, which I'm hesitant to do because it was so putrid, but potentially Richmond, you know, with them coming into this building, into Kingston, I think that's a game that URI can win. URI has always played Richmond tough. I think Richmond has probably gotten the better of them over the past couple of years. Obviously, their Grant Golden is in year 17 for them. So he's, I don't know how long he's been there, but.
It is actually year 6.
Oh, wow. Okay. yeah, I know he, was he the guy that had the heart condition in his freshman year?
Yes.
And yes. Okay. That seems like forever ago to me. But yeah, so he is obviously a force. And the Mitchell twins will have their hands full trying to contain him. And you know, he can move away from the basket a little bit and score from there as well. Richmond is also tremendous guard defense. So when I was talking about Sebastian Thomas's ball handling, they may need him more than usual. But I think this is a winnable game for URI. I think they're in desperate need of a bounce back at home. As for Dayton, who knows? That's another team that I have no idea what to make of. With the exception of a win over Kansas, which I don't want to toss that as like, oh, by the way, I mean, that's massive. But you look at their schedule and their results, and it's very similar to URI. There's some bad losses in there, especially early in the season, and even coming off, you know, a loss to George Mason, which, you know, wasn't great. They only scored 49 points. So Dayton is very tough at home. I don't like when URI plays there because they never seem to play well. I like URI to potentially beat them in Kingston, but they're going to have to play, you know, like they played against Davidson, really. I mean, they went into there and played really well. So if they play like that and close it out, unlike what they did against Davidson, that's a potential win. But I think 2-0 is a tall task. I'll take a split. And if it is a split and you ask me to pick which one they're going to win, it's Richmond in my mind. Just don't go 0-2. That's all I ask.
Yeah. And I mean, Dayton, they have been super inconsistent. We've probably led the pod with that three different times this year, but their big bugaboo, as we saw come out again this weekend, is that their young players have tended to struggle on the road. So for Rhodey, I would say that the much more gettable game is on Valentine's Day as opposed to a Friday night in a very energetic UD arena. The students will have been out of class for 6 or 7 hours by that point, so I would expect it to get very loud with a W.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just don't think URI can win there. That's just my two cents. I hope I'm proven wrong, but much like, you know, Dayton, much like URI, much like 12 other teams in the A-10, you look at the teams they've beaten, the teams they've lost to, and it doesn't make any sense. This year is just so nuts in the league. So URI could win any game on their schedule for the rest of the year, and they could lose any game on the rest of their schedule. And I think you could point to 10 other teams and say the exact same thing.
Honestly, that's why we had to have you on here, to try to sort things out, because I have not had a grasp on this team all year. Every year there's one team that completely confuses me, and normally it's LaSalle. This year it's Rhode Island. And before I let you go, I want to close it out with two questions here. Number one, I don't know if you've wandered over to Basketball Reference lately to look at the Rhode Island season index, but do you have an opinion on the fact that they are still using the old logo that, as soon as I saw it, made me immediately think of Jimmy Barron?
I have not noticed the old logo. But I do know that a lot of places are still using it. It's better than being a Davidson fan, because I've noticed from dipping into their Twitter that a lot of places are using either the Harvard logo for them or no logo. So at least URI has a logo that is somewhat accurate, but I much prefer the interlocking RI rather than the ram horns, which people tell me looks like a shrimp, people that aren't URI fans. So Yeah, I think that needs to be retired. As a side note, URI is rolling out some new alternate uniforms tomorrow night against Richmond, which I think are very sharp. They're gray with the Keeney blue lettering. I think they're very cool. So yeah, Basketball Reference, it's time to update, because they're already rolling out newer and newer jerseys that have that interlocking RI on it.
Yeah, and if you want to see what he is talking about, that was retweeted on the 3Bid League Twitter page, so that probably a little bit less to sort through than the official team account. I did want to cover that, but it was just not going to fit within the time today. So we'll close things out with one last question. Rhodey is fortunate, unlike a lot of other teams, to have a fair amount of geographic rivals at this point. Obviously, they get to play UMass twice a year. I mean, you could technically say Fordham's kind of a geographic rival, not too far away. But they managed to fill the non-conference schedule every year with a lot of teams from Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and occasionally even sliding over to Connecticut. So let's say it's the final day. It's some weird thing has happened that Rhodey gets to play one extra game against the team on the bubble. And if they win, they will absolutely ruin this team's chances of making the NCAA tournament. Who do you want to see them beat in that game?
I mean, is this a team that I'm picking that's actually on the bubble this
year?
No,
it can be literally anyone in any year.
Oh, it's Providence, of course. Every time, all the time. I remember the year that URI won the A-10 tournament in Pittsburgh when they beat VCU. I think that was in 17.
It was.
That year, they actually knocked Providence into the first four because they don't send automatic qualifiers to the first four. So they had to, by them virtue of them winning, they bumped a team to the first four, and the selection committee came out and said it was Providence, and that was incredibly satisfying. So if they could knock them out of the tournament, that's the team I'm picking, and I think 99.99% of URI fans are picking, you know, 100 times out of 100.
Yeah, it's a crazy thing when you really think about it. An A-10 team and a Big East team very close to each other geographically who hate each other. I mean, like, that does sound like a pretty great rivalry to me. And by the way, Rhodey knocking Providence into the first four, they end up losing to USC at UD Arena. So a very quick exit for Providence. And, you know, I only count that as like half of a tournament appearance. So,
yeah. And I remember one year, it was Dayton against Providence in the first four, and they moved the game away from UD Arena. I don't even know where they played.
No, that was round one. Dayton beat Boise State in the first four that year. Providence was a six seed with Chris Dunn, and the game was in Columbus, and the Providence fans were pissed.
Oh, they are still pissed. They still talk about that. And I know, Parlay Pyle and Sully and some other familiar Dayton Twitter personalities still talk about how awesome that was and how pissed Providence fans still are. And I promise you, they're still pissed about it. And I'll always root for the A-10 in the NCAA tournament. Double, triple, quadruple bonus points if you beat Providence. So yeah, that was a very, very exciting game.
I mean, they could have played that game in the Providence Rec Center, and I'm pretty sure Scoochie Smith would have still torn Chris Dunn apart. So I really don't think it matters. Top 10 pick in the NBA draft, just getting his butt kicked all game long. So,
yeah, he was a top 5 pick, I believe. I think he went number 5, and he was actually out of the NBA for a good chunk of the season. He just recently got signed to a G League team, so to call him a bust, I think is fair and accurate.
Yeah, and you know what? We'll end it on that note, because I think the Dayton fans and the Rhode Island fans would love for us to close it out there. So, Dave, where can people find your good work on Rhodey and on the A-10 as a whole?
Sure. So at Roadie Rampage on Twitter and on Instagram. I don't post much on Instagram. I'm really posting when I'm going to games in person. Obviously, that hasn't been happening much over the past year plus. Also at Busting Brackets. You can find the link for that in my Twitter profile and I think my Instagram profile. I'm not honestly sure about that. But yeah, trying to write as much as I can about the A-10. I actually am going to write a little bit about Loyola Chicago this week to kind of familiarize myself with them. And we'll be welcoming them into the A-10 with open arms next year. I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, I am too. I've touched on it kind of briefly in passing. Someone does need to take the big Loyola story angle, whether in print or in podcast, because I am dragging my feet on that. So everyone should definitely go check that out. And be sure to go follow Dave if you haven't yet. Some of the best, actually probably the best, Rhode Island coverage on the internet right now. And firing out a lot of game previews over on Busting Brackets. So if you're trying to get yourself ready for some of the bigger games in the conference, he is the man to go to. Thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Big thank you to Dave Ascoli and to Wayne Epps for coming on the show to talk about their respective Rams teams. And a big thank you, as always, to all of you guys for tuning in and listening. As always, if you enjoyed the show, give us 5 stars on iTunes. Also, reach out. Tell us what you liked about the show. Tell us what guests have been great, who you want to hear again in the future. Speaking of great guests, we will be coming back this week with a big episode coming Friday morning. One of our favorites, the only man that we would trust to unpack the chaos of this conference with us. So stay tuned for that. Everybody, continue to enjoy the basketball. Stay safe out there. And if you want to hear our new intro song, My Late by Meek of the Week, we will be playing the full song right now.
What I have now.